many years ago. This was when I was single.
I listened to this story of a Nepali Christian who converted, probably from Hinduism. That's mostly what they are in Nepal. He began sharing his faith in Nepal and was arrested for preaching the gospel there. It's illegal to convert people in Nepal. That's actually true in a lot of countries. And he was thrown in prison for sharing his faith. And he shared the story of his time in prison. He was kind of describing what they were doing. And they sort of gave him, in a sense, of he was sentenced to die. And their method of killing you was they put you in this hut outdoors. And the hut didn't allow you to stand up. You had to lie down in the hut. It was very small. And if I'm remembering right, they put a dead body in there with you. And they just waited for you to die. And there was a guard who was out there. Make sure you don't get up and leave. And the guy was sharing with me that most people, they would last about 2 to 3 days before they died. That was their, that's what they did. So the man is here. Here he is. He's in this, I'll just call it the death hut. I'm just making that name up. So he's in the death hut, and he's crying out to God. Because he didn't do anything wrong. And so why is he here? And he's talking to God. And one day in his crying out to God, God brought to his mind the story of Saul's conversion, where Saul became Paul. And so he's running through this in his mind, the story of Saul's conversion. And it's in Acts 9. And Saul is blinded, and he hears a voice from heaven that says, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting?" And Saul says, "Who are you, Lord?" And the voice says, "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting." And God spoke to that Nepali Christian through that, because he realized that Saul was persecuting Christians. But Jesus said that Saul was persecuting Jesus. And so to persecute a Christian is to persecute Jesus. And he realized that if that's the case, then Jesus is right here with me right now. Here he is. And he began praising God. And so here he is. He's in this Nepali death hut, just lying there, and he's singing praises to God. And the guard, of course, this doesn't happen very often with the prisoners, and so the guard wants to know what's going on, and the man is explaining to him, "But Jesus is with me," and he's talking to the guard, and the guard converts and becomes a Christian. And so they replace the guard with another guard, and he starts sharing with the other guard who converts. And so he shares with all the guards who come, and all the guards are converting, and 2 weeks later he's still there in the death hut. And they finally take him out and say, "We don't understand this. Why are you doing this?" Now, something happened to that man. Here he is. He's condemned to die. He's waiting to die. And this Nepali Christian went from extreme distress in his soul to joy. Because God spoke. God said something to him, and it spoke to his heart, and it changed his heart. Now, that progression, distress, leading to crying out to God, leading to God speaking to us, leading to joy and confidence, is all throughout the Psalms. You're going to see that in many Psalms again and again and again. That's what we're going to see today. in Psalm 6. And so, just going to read Psalm 6. You should be there. And so, this is to the choir master with stringed instruments. So, I don't know, maybe they had guitars back then. Probably harps. According to the Shemineth, a psalm of David. O Lord, rebuke me not in your anger, nor discipline me in your wrath. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am languishing. Heal me, O Lord, for my bones are troubled. My soul is also greatly troubled. But you, O Lord, how long? Turn, O Lord, deliver my life. Save me for the sake of your steadfast love. For in death there is no remembrance of you. In Sheol, who will give you praise? I am weary with my moaning. Every night I flood my bed with tears. I drench my couch with my weeping. My eye wastes away because of grief. It grows weak because of all my foes. Depart from me, all you workers of evil, for the Lord has heard the sound of my weeping. The Lord has heard my plea. The Lord accepts my prayer. All my enemies shall be ashamed and greatly troubled. They shall turn back and be put to shame in a moment. Now, as we've seen in some of the other psalms, Psalm 3, Psalm 4, Psalm 5, they were all prayers. Psalm 6, you see that again. Look at verses 1 through 4, and tell me what phrase you see again and again in verses 1 through 4.
O Lord.
O Lord. Look at it. Verse 1. O Lord. Do not rebuke me. Verse 2, be gracious to me, O Lord. Heal me, O Lord. Verse 3, but you, O Lord, how long? Verse 4, turn, O Lord, deliver my life. How do you think he's saying that?
Oh, Lord.
He's not saying it dryly, is he? There's some emotion in this. He's crying out. God. O Lord. O Lord. O Lord. O Lord. O Lord. When he is praying what he is praying. This is an urgent prayer. Just like last week. We saw this last week too. Last week he was groaning when he was praying. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my groaning. That's Psalm 5. Well, he's doing that again here. There's groaning in this prayer too. Look at verse 6. The word, the ESV translates it moaning. He's moaning. It means kind of the same thing. It's groaning. Moaning, groaning, and he's weeping. There is some serious pain here in David. Now, back to verses 1 and 2. Verses 1 and 2 are a contrast. Verse 1, if you look at it, it says, do not do this. Verse 2 says, but do this. So you see that in verses 1 and 2. Do not rebuke me in your anger. Do not discipline me in your wrath. But be gracious to me. Why? He tells you why in verse 2. For I am languishing, he says. Languishing, you may not know that English word. Languishing means I'm weak. I'm weary. I'm worn out. I'm faint. I have no strength. God, have mercy on me because I'm a weak man. You know this principle. We do it all the time. We show more mercy to a three-year-old than we do to an adult, don't we? We show more mercy to a man in a wheelchair than we do to someone who can walk normally. We show more mercy to an elderly person who can't walk well without help than we do to a normal person. We understand this idea of weakness makes us want to show mercy to somebody. And David's appealing to that. He's saying to God, don't rebuke me in your wrath, God. He's saying, go easy on me, God. Be gracious to me. That means show mercy to me. I'm weak. David is saying, I'm the guy in the wheelchair, God. I have no strength, God. You see that. Have mercy. He says in verse 2, my bones are troubled. He says in verse 3, my soul is also troubled. And so we see this body, bones, soul. Now, the bones part, it may actually refer to physical pain. He may be ill or injured, or we don't really know what that is. That's possible. Some argue that that's a kind of an expression to show that the pain is deep inside. And it's an expression. It doesn't necessarily mean he's sick physically, but he's, whatever it is, he feels it deep down in his bones. And either one of those could be true. I don't really know. But the point is, this pain, whatever this pain is serious. It's so serious that if you look at verse 6, David is weeping all night, every night. He's drenching his couch with tears. He's flooding his bed with tears. Now, in Psalms 3 and 4, if you remember, at night we saw David sleep in peace. In Psalm 6, he's not sleeping in peace. He's up all night long. Whatever is going on, and whatever is going on deals with his enemies. You see that in verse 7. You see that again in verse 8. And in verse 10. And so his enemies are doing something to him. He doesn't tell us in the psalm what they are doing. But whatever they are doing is very painful to him. We know that his life is in danger. Because he says, verse 4, turn, O Lord, deliver my life. For the sake of your steadfast love. And then verse 5. In death there is no remembrance of you. And Sheol was the Hebrew word that roughly refers to something like the grave. So when you're dead, you go to Sheol, in a sense. And he's saying, Lord, save my life. In death, people don't remember you. He's not making a statement about eternal life. He's making a statement simply about here on earth, death is final. Death is a separation of you and earth. You and earth are no longer going to have any business together when you die. That's the idea that he's getting at when he says that. And he says then he's in danger in verse 7. He's in danger because of all of his foes. That's why he's weeping. He doesn't know if he's going to live tomorrow. You ever been in verse 6? You're weary with moaning. Every night I flood my bed with tears and I drench my couch with my weeping. Have you ever had something so painful that that's where you are right then? You know, Christianity is for all of life, including those times. It's for times of rejoicing, and it's for times of the deepest sorrow. Have you ever flooded your bed with tears at night? You know, I'm sure we have not been where David was. We haven't been where this Nepali Christian was. That's not where we live. I can tell you divorce does this. When my parents divorced, verse 6 is where I was. I can remember that. Or the doctor says, your dad has 3 months to live. When you get that kind of news, you're in verse 6. Every night you flood your bed with tears. You're weeping. You're moaning. If you live long enough, at some point you will experience this kind of thing. It's part of life. It does happen. And you will moan and weep, and your soul will be greatly troubled. That's where David is. And you will be weak, and you will be weary in your soul, and you will not be able to get this issue off your mind. It will be there, just sitting there. It won't go away. And you need to know that God is there for those kinds of times. That's one of the reasons why I love the Psalms so much. Because the Psalms show us God with us in the deepest pit. In the times when we're weeping. In the times when we're rejoicing. They show God's with us during those times. Because when those times come, the temptation will be to say, well, if this is what it means to follow God, no thanks. God didn't help me any. If he was going to help me, then why did this happen? And then the temptation is to abandon God and just say, oh, God didn't do any good for me. If you do that, in the end, you wind up missing God's comfort. You won't receive his comfort if you abandon him. But if you hold on, God will grant you comfort. You also reveal where your real God is. Is your real God God? Or is your real God your earthly comfort? Which is more important to you? Sometimes it's these kinds of times in life that show us which one of those things is most important to us. Because we're going to make a decision. We either are going to hold on to God or we're not during those times. And then if we don't, there's a reason why we didn't. Now David, in this psalm, he is not letting go of God. He asks God in verse 4 to deliver him. Turn, O Lord, deliver my life. And he says, for the sake of your unfailing love, or your steadfast love, I think the ESV says. It's just like Psalm 5. Last week in Psalm 5, we saw David appeal in his prayer to God's character. The steadfast love of God is part of God's character. And David's appealing to it. Here he is in the darkest pit, and he's appealing to this love of God. He's saying, God, do not deliver me because of me. I'm nothing, God. Deliver me because of your steadfast love. You, God, you love me. Show it. I want to see your love. Deliver my life, God. Show everyone your steadfast love. Let it be plain for all to see. That's the idea that David is appealing to. Now that's his prayer. I kind of went through his prayer a little bit. Those are verses 1 through 7. It's David's prayer. Now in your Bible, if you've got a pen, what I'd like you to do is draw a line between verse 7 and verse 8. Because at verse 8, everything changes. The tone in verses 1 through 7 is desperate. The tone in verses 8 through 10 is confident. The audience in verses 1 through 7 is God. The audience in verses 8 through 10 is men. Now he's talking to men about God. He's telling people what God has done. David is no longer asking for God's help. And now he's declaring it. And so I just want you to listen for the change. I'm going to read again. Not the whole psalm. I'm going to start in verse 6. Just listen to how everything changes at verse 8. Verse 6, he's talking to God. And he's saying, I am weary with my moaning. Every night I flood my bed with tears. I drench my couch with my weeping. My eye wastes away because of grief. It grows weak because of all my foes. Depart from me, all you workers of evil, for the Lord has heard the sound of my weeping. The Lord has heard my plea. The Lord accepts my prayer. All my enemies shall be ashamed and greatly troubled. They shall turn back and be put to shame in a moment. Now, what happened? Why the change? Guys, I think the best explanation for the change is right there in the text. Look at verses 8 and 9. And three times David says, verse 8, the Lord has heard the sound of my weeping. Verse 9, the Lord has heard my plea. The Lord accepts my prayer. That's another way of saying God heard me. Three times, that's what he says. That's why the change. God heard him. So here's the progression. David is in distress. David cries out to God. God hears him. And David is now confident in the face of his enemies. But this is even better than God heard him. This is God heard him, and David knows God heard him. You see, God could hear him, and David may not know it. But David actually knows it. He's declaring it three times in these verses. Sometimes Leanne will be talking with me, and she'll tell me, you know, whatever, la 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 la, whatever she's talking about. And I'll say, yeah, yeah. And then she'll say, did you hear me? And I'll say, yeah, I heard you. And she'll say, what did I say? And then I'll tell her what she said if I heard her. usually I heard her. So Leanne wants to know if I heard her. It's not just enough that I did hear her. She wants to know that I heard her. That's a different step. That's where David is. This isn't just God heard him, but David wants to know it. David knows God heard him. See, that situation with Leanne and me, it's like that with us and God. We want that too. We want to know God hears our prayers. It's when you lose So when you lose a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a husband or a wife or something, you know, a job, or immigration says, sorry, you have to leave. You can't stay here. And all of your plans are gone. They just dissolved in smoke. And you want to know God hears when you're in that situation. And so David does know God hears, and he declares that his enemies will be ashamed. And they will be greatly troubled. He's paralleling him. Remember earlier, my bones are troubled. My soul is greatly troubled. And then in verse 10, all my enemies will be greatly troubled. It's the same word. It's a parallel. The enemies are going to get what he's got. That's the idea. Now, how does he know this? God hears him, and he knows God hears him. But how does he know God hears him? Has God ever spoken to you in prayer? Or is your prayer just you talking? I mean, when you pray, what goes on? Is it just you got a list and you give God your list? And there's nothing wrong with, you know, giving God requests for things that, you know, we need to do that. But is that all prayer is? Or is there more to prayer than that? See, I think there's more to prayer than that. I think God also needs to speak back. Another example, actually another prison example. My mentor was a guy named Mr. Tok. He was an international, actually. He was Greek, grew up in Turkey, and he served in the Greek army for a time when he was young. And he actually was thrown in prison for not taking an oath in the Greek army. And it actually became a very big deal because the authorities had decided to execute him over this issue. And so the night before his execution, he's in prison and he's talking to God. And he's talking to God, obviously, about, you know, what's getting ready to happen. And God speaks to him. And God said to him, I have called you to Africa. And he said back to God, Lord, they're going to execute me in the morning. How are you going to send me to Africa? And he said, God spoke to him and said, is it too great a thing for the Lord to raise the dead? And he said, Mr. Tok then figured, oh, I guess how God does this isn't really my problem. That's God's problem. And he went to sleep. And he slept through the night. To where when the guards came in, they poked him and shoved him and they had to kick him in the side to wake him up. Now, he obviously did not get executed because he became my mentor later. they wound up releasing him. And he wound up going to Africa as a missionary to Muslims in Africa eventually. Now, here's a man whose life is in danger, who prays to God. God hears, and God speaks. God actually told him some very specific things. I'm calling you to Africa. You are going to Africa. And that gave him peace. Now, it gave him peace because he believed it. If he didn't believe it, he might not have peace. But he really did believe it. Somehow, some way, I don't know how, God's going to send me to Africa. Now, I want you to look at verses 1 through 7 real fast again. In verses 1 through 7, there is no peace. His soul is greatly troubled. He is staying up all night weeping. He's flooding his couch with tears. His eye is wasted away because of grief. There is no peace, verses 1 through 7. Now I want you to look at verses 8 through 10. There's peace. This is this experience. There's an old Christian, what is a Roman Catholic writer called St. John of the Cross, described this as the dark night of the soul. David is going through the dark night of the soul in Psalm 6. This is Gethsemane, if you want to bring it up to Jesus' time. And Jesus is sweating blood because his soul is so pained because of the weight of what he is looking at. This is a great wrestling of the soul inside. Gethsemane, something happens. Jesus prays for a couple of hours, and then he says, "Rise, let's go. My betrayer is at hand." And then Jesus walks to the cross. He wasn't really ready to walk to the cross before Gethsemane. But after Gethsemane, he's ready to walk to the cross. When the dark night comes and you hold on to God, your soul grows stronger when that happens. See, in Psalm 6, what we are seeing is God building a man through what that man has to go through. See, God builds us sometimes by bringing great pain. That's part of the process of growing in Christ. And God then lets us wrestle in with our souls with that pain. And we wrestle with God in prayer through whatever the issue happens to be. And God's going to see if we're going to hold on. A.W. Tozer is a Christian writer, one of my favorite writers. I would recommend you read everything you can by Tozer. He said this. He said, "It is doubtful whether God can bless a man greatly until he has first hurt him deeply." And there's a lot of truth in that. Because in the end, we have to be willing to let go of everything except God and hold on to God and not the other stuff. And sometimes it takes great pain to let go of the other stuff and hold on to God. Sometimes that's where we see that, yes, we're going to hold on to God. And we come out of it a different person. And so in Psalm 6, David is hurt deeply. But God meets him in his heart. And David comes out the other side at the end of the psalm, a different man than he is in the beginning of the psalm. And you see two men, really, in Psalm 6. And the reality is, so will we when we go through the dark night of the soul. We're going to close. We're going to sing a song. We're going to sing Psalm 6.